Welcome back to episode 142 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here at Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glory of ratings gain, but we also dive into the plateaus, and perhaps below that, the pits of despair. You don't want to be there. I've been there. It's a dark, awful place. All right. If you want to support the show, though, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen-level supporters, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donovich Burgess, Brandon Halta, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Recht, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, filling out the Google form in the show notes is a great way to do it. You can also contact me on Twitter. And if you're interested in chess improvement, which I'm guessing you are, Noel Studer has two excellent training programs you can use. You can use the code in the show notes. You'll get a discount. I'll get rewards. Everyone wins from chess improvement. And also, if you're interested in calculation work, especially the chess gym is quite wonderful. I've been doing a lot of calculation work over there. They have a lot of other things as well, including sparring. And I've included a link that you can use to support the show there as well. But now it is time to get on the task of the moment. We bring on Dalton. Dalton is an FM. He's a dedicated chess improver. He's a coach. He's a content creator. He's a chessable author. If it can be done, Dalton has done it. Dalton, welcome to the show. Have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Yeah, I definitely played some chess today. Got in some blitz games earlier to work on some openings that I'm looking to kind of learn and memorize. And got in some games and got some wins.
Okay. See, I'm already hearing something that intrigues me. It sounds like you are doing blitz for chess improvement, not just for fun.
Yeah, for the most part, that's how I try to view it. It doesn't always work out so easily when there's some losses from time to time. But for the most part, trying to take the blitz games as kind of a practice and improvement rather than just focusing purely on the results.
Okay, gotcha. And do you do anything with them? Do you run them through an engine? Can you just feel when there's things you need to review when you're done?
If I'm on top of things, I'll do a pretty good job of bringing the games over to ChessBase and running them through an engine and trying to. I like to try to make exercises that out of the games that I might use for students in lessons that I teach.
Okay.
So if I'm on top of things, I'll do that after the games. But otherwise, I'll usually, if I'm not doing that, I'll just run it through an engine real quick and just kind of see what happened.
Okay, so you do run each game through an engine just to get a quick overview of what happened in the game?
At the very least, yeah.
Okay, so you don't, like when someone wants to rematch you five times in a row, you don't farm them?
if I win, I'm more likely to rematch, quite honestly. And if I lose, I try to see if I can, maybe I can run something through there and maybe I need to fix something in the opening real quick before I rematch them.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I never rematch anyone. I'm sure people get angry because my rule to keep myself honest is after every single blitz game, I have to take, 3 or 4 minutes to look at it. And I know that if I start breaking that rule for exceptions like farming people, then I get worried that maybe the rule will get broken forever. So who knows?
Yeah, it's easy to fall into the process of if you don't do it for one game and then you hold off for a couple of games and then you have games built up, it's kind of unlikely, or at least less likely, to kind of go back and do all of the games as we might have wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah, and because blitz games are so fast and I don't get to go as deep with them, they don't stay with me very long. I only really have them until I play another game, and then that one's kind of gone. But that's just
yeah. Me. Yeah, it makes sense.
All right, well, Dalton, let's go back to your childhood. Did you play at all as a kid? Were you an FM when you were 6? What happened as a child?
So I think I learned how to play the game when I was probably 7 or 8, somewhere in there. My dad taught me and just how the pieces move, essentially, at that point. And we had like just a little chessboard in the house somewhere. My dad's not much of a chess player, though. So I learned probably when I was like 7 or 8, but the real point where I really picked the game up was around the age of 10, back in like 5th grade or something like that. There was another kid in my class who him and I both kind of found like a chess set in the corner of the room during some free time, and we both started kind of playing because we both knew how the pieces moved. And once I kind of like at that point, that's kind of when I got more interested in it, and I started. I found out you could play online back then, and started playing online. Kind of treated it like a probably more like a video game at that point. And yeah, just got addicted to it, for lack of a better way of explaining it. And parents saw that I was playing it a bunch. They probably thought it was better than doing other things that
Yeah,
the 10-year-old
other
maybe could be
video
doing. And yeah, so they're the ones that kind of found like the local club in the area, the chess club, and they're the ones that took me for the first time, of course. And yeah, it was the Orlando Chess and Games Center, which is not functioning nowadays from how I understand it. But yeah, that I started going there at a bunch of different Friday nights for the club meetings and stuff like that, and playing tournaments, and kind of just started going pretty consistently at that point.
Okay, so were you one of those like prodigy 10-year-olds? Were you just having fun with it? Were you going super deep with it? What was your approach?
I wouldn't say I was a prodigy 10-year-old. I was very into the game. I do have kind of a personality where if like I'm really into something, I'm really heavily into it, whatever that might be. It's been sports at various times, other video games, stuff like that over the years. But I voraciously read a bunch of different chess books. Like I read every book I could get my hand on from the library or from the bookstore, and yeah, that was kind of, I think, the biggest thing in my opinion at that point that was kind of like helping me to improve the most, aside from just playing at the club a bunch. And I do remember kind of consistently gaining rating for a long time, but I wasn't playing so much that I had like gigantic jumps in a short amount of time. Like my progress was more spread out over a longer amount of time, because I would play maybe once a month or every other month or something like that. But it was relatively upwards from just being completely engrossed with the game
That's
from that age.
pretty amazing. I don't know many 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds that are like, I'm going to read chess books, at least not now.
Not nowadays, especially with all the digital stuff. That's that I do think that that's one of the biggest drawbacks of kind of the digital age we're in right now, is that like people, if they're reading books, it's on Kindle or on their phones or stuff like that, and it's not the same. I have a bit of a harder time reading books nowadays when it's just a lot more distractions are easily available.
Yeah, I don't know 100%, but I have a feeling the middle schoolers at our chess club don't have a collection of chess books. Actually, I think they have some chess books at home. I do not think they read them. I'm not convinced that they're reading them, but they are getting a lot better.
I was definitely unique in that regard for sure.
Okay. So did you stick with chess all through, or was there a point where you hit some wall and left for frustration, or you became like a high schooler and got out? What was that trajectory like?
I pretty much stuck with it all through. There has been some parts kind of later on in my adult life where I've taken like a little bit of a break from tournaments for whatever reasons, but for the most part, ever since I really started playing in tournaments when I was like 10 years old, I've pretty much played pretty consistently since then. Consistently, again, meaning like, you know, at least a handful per year, aside from some breaks over the years. But yeah, I've always enjoyed the game. I never had a period of time where I kind of like fell out of love with it or anything like that. No, I've kind of just stuck with it ever since then.
That's amazing. Do you feel like it's that consistency that has given you that sort of rock to build on, even as you get older, still sort of chasing milestones and gaining rating points?
Yeah, the fact that I enjoy the game as much as I do today, probably more than I did at various points in the past. Especially, I'd say, with some of the new, I guess you could kind of call them like, well, maybe again going back to the digital age of things, like it's easier than ever now to play against people just online or against strong players. It's a lot easier than it used to be in the past. Yeah, the consistency has kind of been there in terms of playing and looking to improve. And yeah, I think that that's kind of just been a big part of it.
Gotcha. What would you say your rating was when you were like 18 or whatever, when you sort of like officially became an adult? How far had you gotten?
I think at 18, it might have been 17 or 18 when I hit master for the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what did you do to get to master? Like you said, you're a kid, you're reading books. What were there any books that stood out to you as being especially important or anything you did to get you there?
Let's see, specific books. I mean, I think I got somewhat fortunate that it felt like, kind of looking back on it, all of the what you might kind of call like big popular books that like are almost always recommended nowadays were ones that I ended up like going through like without anybody necessarily recommending them.
Yeah.
I went through like Reassess Your Chess at a young age. I went through like Amateur's Mind, so Jeremy Silman books. I went through, let's see, I remember, trying to remember the name. I think it's called Forcing Chess Moves by Charles Hertan. I went through that one in the past. I remember going through Deveretsky's Ending in Endgame Manual
Wow.
before I probably needed to. I did not get as much out of it on the first go as I probably could have waited on that one a bit. Yeah, so it like I was the kid in school who like brought the chess book to school and like read underneath his desk like in the middle of class and stuff like that. Yeah, I was that
That's
guy.
amazing because my high school kids do that too, only it's with their phones and Instagram, so it's a little different. It's a little different.
It's yeah, a little bit different nowadays for sure. But yeah, so yeah, it was a lot of going through books, reading as much as I could. I do also think looking back on it as well, a big part of it, the improvement was the fact that I had a lot of friends who played chess, like just friends from the local chess club that we were all kind of like playing each other, working together, working in a very loose sense of the word. We never called it like working on chess. We just like played games against each other and stuff like that. And yeah, I had like a good friend group that we all kind of hit master around the same time and kind of were playing and training together, you could say. And yeah, I think it was kind of a combination of that, playing pretty consistently, reading a bunch of books over the years. I think it's probably like a combination of those things that kind of kept me on the path upward.
That's cool. I'm curious, like as a kid, were you mostly playing Scholastic tournaments or are you just playing like regular open events?
So I started off with Scholastic, of course, but I do remember getting into open events or, like the section version of the events relatively early on. I was kind of improving at a pace where the Scholastic events weren't kind of like worth playing. I would play in like the K-12 events, like the nationals and stuff like that. But yeah, I was into kind of the open events probably, maybe a year or two into playing in the first place, something like that, maybe, if I
Yeah.
remember correctly.
So let's see, you're like a middle schooler, maybe you're 11, 12. Are you intimidated by the adults or are you like, the adults are weak and soft? I will dine on their flesh.
I don't really remember thinking one way or the other, quite honestly. I don't remember if I was intimidated or just a cocky kid. I don't actually remember. I think I kind of just played the game and almost didn't really care who I was playing, whether it was like another little kid, or an old man or an older adult or something like that back when I'm in middle school. I don't think I really thought too much about that, quite honestly.
Gotcha. And when you were in middle school, an old man was like anyone 28 or over, probably. Yeah. Middle schoolers' sense of age is quite interesting. Okay, well, that's cool. So you start hitting your adult years. You said you're around master. What kept you going? Like, what did you do as an adult to keep gaining points? Because it feels like master is so hard to get to, and then going beyond that is like doing the impossible. And here you are as an adult, still trying to press on, gain rating points. Like, what kept you going? Did you have goals that you were trying to reach?
I think I just enjoyed the game, quite honestly. I don't remember having any big ambitious goals, quite honestly. Like I remember when I hit Master, I'm still playing. I remember hitting, I think my kind of original peak was 2300, 2322, somewhere in that range. But I didn't really have any ambitions with the game at that point. It wasn't, I didn't think, oh, I'm going to be an IM or a GM or anything like that. It was more so just, I really enjoyed the game. I played it for, not to sound kind of hokey, but like kind of like the love of the game. I didn't have any big grand plans with it. But what kind of once I hit that first, I probably hit this first wall at a certain point, and then that's kind of where I eventually did take a little bit of a break because progress kind of stalled out. I hit one of the plateaus that's that nobody has fun dealing with. And so because I didn't have any kind of big ambitions with the game at that point, I did kind of stall out a bit because I wasn't trying to get to IM or trying to get to GM necessarily. I didn't have, I think like the first time that I ever traveled out of state to play in a tournament was probably within the past like 5 years or something like that.
Oh, wow. What state were you in where you were able to find the main tournaments?
Florida.
Okay, yeah.
Florida had a pretty good circuit of events, you could say, and in Orlando and
Yeah.
up in Jacksonville, down in Miami. Like I was able to get into a pretty good amount of events in Florida without necessarily needing to travel out of the state.
Yeah, I'm always seeing stuff. Have you gotten to play in the villages yet?
No, I haven't gotten to play there, but I have friends that have played in the events there, and I'm familiar with the villages.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, that's cool. So when you hit the wall or hit the plateau, was there any part of you that was like, I should just do something else? Or was it more just like, I still love chess, so I'm just going to keep kind of like doing this, but you just didn't, I don't know if you just didn't have like a plan to help you push through that plateau, or what got you through that?
Yeah, so what kind of happened around this time, I want to say this is probably around, I don't know, 2014, 2015, somewhere in there, when I kind of like took a break for a while, for I think about a year and a half or 2 years, somewhere in there.
Okay.
I was still playing the game, like online especially. I was actually still coaching at that time as well. And how do I put it? I kind of was at this point where I still enjoyed the game very much, but without any kind of goals or ambitions. When I would play in tournaments, it was more so just to hang out with friends, have fun, see how the games go. I wasn't doing a ton of training at home necessarily at that point or anything like that. But when that ended up changing was in the end of 2019, or in October of 2019, I married my wife, and
And she was like, if you're not an IM in 3 years, we're done.
It was not put that way, but she was a help, I will say for sure,
Oh, that's cool.
in terms of kind of progressing forward. So we got married in October 2019, and then COVID hits March, 6 months later essentially. And
Yeah.
so everybody's stuck at home and locked down and things like that. And while that was going on, I started getting some lessons with a coach, which I never really done before, quite honestly. And I started to kind of refine the desire to improve at playing chess rather than just doing it for fun at that point. And she was also kind of like there helping me and saying like, hey, if this is like what you want to do, we can like we can do this. Like we'll go travel. We both like to travel anyways, but she was like fully on board with the traveling out of state to tournaments at that point once the pandemic kind of died down. And traveling out of state to tournaments, like trying to actually work towards IM at, I kind of essentially I finally set a goal and said I want to work towards International Master. And once I kind of set that goal and then the pandemic started dying down and we were able to actually go to tournaments, then that's kind of that's now I'm definitely taking it more seriously and actively training and actively working harder at the game, as opposed to in the past I was kind of just playing without much purpose is
Yeah.
how I would put it.
It's such an interesting situation, right? Because it feels like there's a whole sort of like argument in the community of adult improvers, which is like, do you focus on goals and then have to deal with the constant disappointment of not making goals? Do you make it about the process? It sounds for you like the process just wasn't quite enough to get you to take it as seriously as you need to reach that next step. You actually needed a goal to like latch on to really drive you there.
Yeah, I think that focusing on the process is very important for sure, because if you only try to judge your progress by hitting certain like rating goals or certain like, oh, I want to hit, whatever this rating or this title is or a category or whatever it might be. If you're only judging your improvement by that, then you could potentially be setting yourself up for failure, unfortunately, especially if you set like kind of maybe too far off goals, and you're thinking they're going to happen sooner than they are happening. But I do also think that it is still good to have kind of I don't know, you could call it maybe like a North Star, so to speak, where kind of like this is the thing I'm working towards. This is what I do want to accomplish. I want to focus on all of the process to get there, but there is actually something I'm trying to get to at the end of this. Whether that's, whether that is a certain rating or a certain title or a certain achievement that you're wanting to accomplish, I think it is good to have that kind of grand plan, grand goal that you want, and but then having, making sure that you're following like a good process of getting there. But without that goal in the first place, you could, well, that's kind of what I was doing. I was kind of just, playing and not having any real goal I was looking forward to. So that
Gotcha.
is definitely something that changed.
So it sounds like you're trying to combine an overarching goal while still being healthy about it and focusing on the process to get you to the goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha. And your goal, it sounds like, is a reasonable goal, not super GM, which I'm not doubting that you can become a super GM. I'm just saying that sounds like a big goal.
Well, one step at a time.
Okay, that seems reasonable. So what does your sort of study process look like now that you've gotten more serious? Like, it's so interesting to me. It like getting IM seems like a mythical goal. So what are you doing to try to move from FM to IM?
Yeah, so it's kind of a, well, it's obviously a combination of a lot of different things. I mean, the very basic answer is really just improving at everything, improving calculation, improving openings and game strategy, all that different stuff. But to be more specific about it, it's a lot of like playing in tournaments, of course. Once I've played games, kind of analyzing those games in depth, trying to figure out what is going right, what's going wrong, the things that are going wrong, trying to figure out kind of targeted ways of working on those things in kind of the training in between tournaments. And whether that is, let's say, like right now I'm kind of working on learning, let's say, like a new opening, and then playing blitz games specifically to work on those openings, reviewing the lines, whether it's in chess base or chessable after the games are played. If I'm working on calculation at a certain point, trying to solve a certain amount of tactics or certain time, certain 30 minutes or an hour of tactics a day or calculation practice. If it's in games, trying to go through a lot of different games of master players where they're in the in-game phase specifically and trying to think through what I would do in each of the positions myself. So it's kind of it's a combination of all these things, but there are certain days or weeks where I'll kind of maybe prioritize one over another. And I wouldn't necessarily say I have it mapped out as to which days those are, but it kind of is, whatever kind of interests me on a particular day, I'll usually dive into it a bit more on the day.
Basically trying to hit all the areas, targeting your weaknesses. It all sounds very active. It sounds like everything you're doing is quite active. It's not like passively watching a video, but really doing your own investigative work.
Yeah, I try to keep it in the active learning category as much as possible. Of course, I do watch, chess videos or read. Reading books is probably somewhere in between a little bit. I watch, chess broadcasts and follow the candidates and stuff like that, which is very interesting. I don't know if it's necessarily helping my chess while I'm just watching things, but it's obviously very interesting, and I'm gonna follow stuff like that. But trying to keep it as active as kind of you could say like mentally stimulating as possible, trying to think through positions or solve things myself rather than just listening to a video or letting somebody tell me what's
Yeah,
going on.
that makes sense. Well, I'm a little bit fascinated. So you're an FM and you're doing opening work. Is this because you've decided your current repertoire is not sufficient to get you to IM, or is it more of like a I need to diversify so you can't just look me up on opening tree and then just prep for me easily?
It's a little bit more of the second part there, but also quite honestly, I've just kind of I just enjoy working on openings. It's also just kind of the base level of it. For a long time when I was playing chess, like all of this time kind of growing up and improving, my opening repertoire consisted of as white, it was like d4, knight f3, g3, bishop g2, like every single game, which is probably close to Christoph Solecki's Keep It Simple d4, even though I had this was before the course ever came out. And then as black, it was I was playing the Binko Gambit, which I do love dearly as an opening, but is a little bit trickier to pull off in at the master level. So for a long time, I was kind of playing just a very narrow repertoire of openings, but this was before Chessable, before openings were really like worked on heavily by even club level players, as they kind of are now. Pretty much once the pandemic started, and Chessable had already been out at that point, but I kind of started using it myself more, and I started like looking into a bunch of different courses and drilling openings more, and kind of fell a bit more in love with opening work at that point, even if it wasn't only just listening to what somebody on Chessable said, but even just kind of like analyzing the openings myself and using the engine and trying to figure out how I would approach a certain position. So I do enjoy it, but it is also a case of I do want to diversify at the same time because at the level that I'm at, you can prepare for the large majority of your opponents in some regards. So if somebody is seeing that I only play one opening, I very well may know that opening better than they do anyways, but it's good to kind of I like this moving target approach. Like I want to be a moving target rather than a stationary waiting for somebody to do preparation against me.
Gotcha. So it sounds like it's not just a frustration with your openings, but you're constantly working on openings, constantly adding new things to your arsenal. You
Yeah,
know
I
what?
would. Yeah, I wouldn't.
Sounds like you're going to be a super GM. It sounds like you're on your way.
I wish it was that simple.
Yeah, at my level, there's always a little bit of me that's a little nervous someone's going to prep for me a lot, but I got to be honest. I'm like, I don't know. Like, how much prep can you do against like the Karo Khan? It's just kind of like, if you're only 1700, then I probably know it a little bit better than you, and it's a safe opening. You're not going to be able to like crush me with your prep in the opening.
Yeah, I had a student recently actually tell me that he plays a, I guess his club has like a weekly game that he'll play on a certain week of the night. And he told me that his opponent told him after the game that they played that the opponent had prepared the whole day for his opening. And so like when I heard that, I was like, oh yeah, that like it's a whole different ball game compared to back when I was at the same level as the student. And yeah, people weren't doing anything like that in the past, but it's a little more common nowadays. But even with that being said, yeah, it's probably more on the rare side of things. I don't imagine most people are preparing all day for one opponent or something like that.
Yeah, there's one guy at the club who does that. And I think it's worked really well for him. He's gone from like 1700 to almost 1900. But I don't know. For some reason, I maybe foolishly don't fear that. I'm just kind of like, okay, go ahead, prep away. That's fine. I'll keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly good approach. Yeah, I would generally not. I would prioritize other things than solely openings in a case like that for sure.
And what are you doing to try to hit IM? Are you going to like norm tournaments? Are you traveling all over the world? Are you hanging out at those like European tournaments that are known to be a little bit shady? Are you doing any of those?
Haven't made it to Europe yet. I would like to get to Europe one day for something like the Reykjavik Open or one of those kind of big open events. I think that'd be very cool. But no, I've mostly been playing in the like I don't know, I guess you call them like the Continental Chess Association type tournaments, the kind of big ones that'll be in, Vegas or Chicago. There's I've played in some Charlotte events. I played down in Texas and Dallas. I did play in a couple of IM Norm events that were in Chicago when I was living there. Yeah, I played in, I think it was three or four of those. I did not get any norms, unfortunately, but it was a very cool experience being able to play in like a round robin where you knew you had a certain score that you needed to get, and you knew every single person you were going to play prior to the event as well. So the preparation for those is definitely a bit more intense compared to an event where you find the opponent out like 5 minutes before you play them or
Yeah.
something
Did you
like
get a team of seconds to help you?
that. I had a friend I was training with at that time that we would work on some opening stuff, but no team of seconds.
You should have gotten Jan Gustafsson. I think he would have been great.
Probably above my pay grade, but if he wants to help out, I will take the
Know, I'll be your second. I don't have a lot of openings knowledge, but I'll happily help you.
Sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, and are you able to get norms from the big events? It seems so spotty with how strict the whole norm chasing is.
Yeah, so you can get them from the big events, but it is a little bit more of a there's definitely a bit more of a luck factor, in the sense that you don't, I mean, you don't really control the specific opponents you play, of course. So you don't know if you're going to play people that are all of the same federation, for instance. If you, I think for an IM norm, you need to play people. Your nine opponents in a tournament need to be from it's either three or four different federations. And so if you happen to play seven US opponents and then two different federation opponents, and maybe you need four federations total or something like that, then you, even if you won all nine games, I don't think you're getting the norm as far as I understand. So yeah, you do have to be a little bit fortunate with the draw or with kind of the getting the right pairings and stuff like that. But ultimately, if you play well enough, the norms will come, is really just what it kind of comes
Okay.
down to.
So you're a little bit less chasing the norms than you are just trying to play good chess and doing the best you can and have positive thinking that the norms will come your way.
Yeah, it's more of
Okay.
that for sure.
That's fair. I'm curious about coaching. It sounds like you've been chess coaching for a long time. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I started in 2014. So like March of 2014, so it's just over 10 years now. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. What got you into coaching?
So the story of that is so I graduate from high school in 2010, and then I start going to a local college for 2 years. I get kind of, the 2-year degree, and then I start going to a bigger college to go for a potential 4-year degree. And at a certain point in there, I just really didn't want to go to college anymore. I didn't like school. There was tons of things I was interested in learning, but I didn't like tests. I didn't like having to drive to the college that was like 45 minutes away every single day, and just didn't really want to do it. And I was going for it. I was essentially going for a degree that probably wasn't going to do a whole lot for job prospects at that point.
Was it a
So,
PhD in history?
not in history,
Okay.
but yeah. So, essentially, I kind of like ended up dropping out of the certain semester. I dropped out early on, but I dropped out of college after kind of getting the 2-year degree already. But
Gotcha.
once that happened, I had to get a job.
Yeah.
My parents were very helpful in terms of, if I was going to school, they were fine supporting me. But at a certain point, I kind of just need to like make my own money, and eventually I wanted to move out anyways. So
Yeah.
so I was doing other jobs at this point. Like coaching wasn't the first job that I started doing. Coaching really only started kind of spontaneously, sort of, where I had never really thought about doing it. But once I was in this scenario where I needed to get a job, and I was working some other jobs and they weren't anything special, I wasn't exactly enjoying them, I kind of just thought at a certain point, like, maybe I could give coaching a go. Like, I could try it out. Like, I enjoy the game. I enjoy kind of helping people or doing like analysis with people, like in the middle or in between games. And I had never really like formally taught anybody, but I was like, oh, let me just, let me put out like a coaching profile on chess.com, and let me kind of, see if I can drum up a little bit of interest. And back at this point on chess.com, you were able to, I do think they fixed this pretty quickly, but you were able to write articles on chess.com that, without being like, I wasn't working for chess.com. I think they changed that pretty quickly, but to now you can only write like blogs on the site. But I was able to write a couple of articles that I think I titled them like the 3 keys to chess improvement or something like that.
Okay.
And within a couple of spots in the articles, I would link to the website that I had created for coaching. And so that's kind of how I ended up getting the first kind of batch of students. And I guess I did, a good enough job that there was at least a little bit of spread of word from some of these people. And there was nothing really special at the start in terms of any numbers. I was still working these other part-time jobs at the same time, and but over time it kind of started growing. I started coaching more. It eventually got to a point where I was able to quit the other part-time jobs and just focus on coaching solely. And
Nice.
yeah, that's the origin story. But it was slow starting,
Okay.
aside from that little batch of people at the very beginning.
And did you do the whole like scholastic go school to school coaching at all, or is this strictly like private lessons?
I've done probably like 99% online private lessons.
Okay.
I did teach at a school for maybe like a year, like 2 semesters, something like that. It was like one of the after school chess classes, and I was running like the advanced section with, there's probably like a handful of kids in the class. So I remember doing that for about a year, but that was it. It wasn't much more than that.
Gotcha. And so if you're advertising on chess.com, is this mostly then like adult improvers, or do you have a lot of youngster students as well?
It's mostly adult improvers at that point. Yeah,
Okay.
I did have some young students and still do have some young students. But the majority of people that I've taught over the years have been probably the adult improver category for sure.
That's cool. And what about coaching for you? Do you feel like coaching helps your own chess, or is this more of just like a way you make money and that's sort of separate from chess improvement?
You mean me coaching other students to for my own
Yeah,
improvement?
do you feel like it helps your improvement? Do you think it detracts from it? Like you get burnt out and you're like, I don't want to study. Like, how does it interact with your own improvement?
So I do think that the coaching that I do with students, it does the ability to kind of explain things, I think helps with reinforcing things that I already understand. So if I'm explaining to a student about, let's say, like, I don't know, using the bishop pair or converting this particular in-game or middle game position into a win, I have to kind of think through not only how I'd explain it to them, but like how would I actually do it in a game myself so that I can kind of verbalize this thinking process to them as best as I can.
Gotcha.
So I think that that part of things is helpful. I also do think that the like preparation I put into the lessons, or like when I'm kind of curating homework positions for students to send to them, I have to go through like, a pretty decent sized amount of games to find positions that work for certain students. So as I'm going through these games, I'm looking at them for my own improvement, as well as kind of looking for the homework positions for students at the same time. But it's kind of it's helping both of us out at the same time for that. And then especially if I do like with some of the stronger students I have, I'm able to kind of talk through things with them at a level where they even sometimes will say something. They're like, oh, maybe I hadn't actually thought of it that way. Or, they maybe ask a question about a position and like, oh, I hadn't thought about that move. Like, let's figure it out together and see if we can work out how we would play it. And yeah, so it definitely helps out in different ways.
Okay, that's cool. I'd like to ask you a bit about Chessable, if you don't mind. I've noticed you have a number of courses, and I'm curious, like, this is going to sound bad, but like you're just an FM. Like, what made you think I should make Chessable courses? Like I always worry myself, like, what, how good do you have to be to make a Chessable course? Can a 1700 be like, hey, I've got something interesting to offer? Can a master do it? Can an FM do it? Do you have to be a GM? What was your thought process there? What gave you sort of like the confidence to say, I can make a Chessable course?
Yeah, so in terms of the first course that I made, which is this course Survive and Thrive that's focused on defensive calculation and blunder prevention, I kind of made that course sort of out of a selfish reason. Selfish in the sense of not like monetary driven, but more like I wanted to make a course for I had students that were having these problems of like blundering in games and making mistakes and losing games just off of like one move mistakes and stuff like that. And I was kind of thinking, like, how do I help them with this? And there wasn't really that many resources for that. There really aren't even still that many of them. There have been more that have come along as time has gone on a little bit, but I ended up pitching the idea to Chessable more so because I wanted to find these positions anyways myself to have for students. And I just kind of figured if I'm gonna be making them or finding these positions for students anyways, why not, make a course that I could point them to, or anybody else, of course, on the site that wanted to have the course as well. So it was mainly out of just, you could kind of say, like, there was like a market gap. Nobody had that course or had a topic focusing on that as far as I was aware. And so I kind of thought, let me fill it because I can also recommend this to students because it's something that they need for their own games at the same time. In terms of kind of the level of myself compared to other players, I had seen some people on the site or some authors on the site that were like lower rated players. So I didn't really think too much of, oh, I'm an FM and I'm not an IM or a GM. I thought maybe the sales would be better if I was a GM or something like that. But in terms of like actually making the course, I didn't think too much of the level of my level or anything like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's cool. Because it does seem like someone of any level can make a course if it's, targeted to the right audience. Like, I'm not going to be able to make an opening repertoire for a super GM, but I could make, a course for something else, which, by the way, I am. Okay.
Oh, you're working on one?
Yeah, I'm
Oh, very
working on
cool.
something. We're in the works on something. So it's going to be a while though. How long did it take you to make Survive and Thrive?
Ooh. I think I originally started on making it. I remember, so this is a little bit of an aside story here, but once the pandemic kind of started to die down and my wife and I's lease ran out where we were living in Florida, we started moving kind of all over the country to a bunch of different locations just to kind of, we were kind of footloose and didn't really like, I was working online and so we could kind of live wherever we wanted to. We ended up moving to Ecuador for a couple of months.
Oh,
And
wow.
when I was in Ecuador, I remember working on Survive and Thrive like a lot for like long hours of multiple days of the week. So I think for that particular course, I was able to actually kind of knock it out within a couple of months. But it's not always been that easy to not that was easy, but I've not always had it, that much amount of time in a day to kind of work through it.
I just had spring break and it was a very fruitful spring break. But now that I'm back at school, I'm like, well, I don't know when I'm gonna have time to keep working on this course. So, but papers have been signed, so I better find time to work on this course. Okay, so this Survive and Thrive course is one that I keep meaning to buy, and for some reason I haven't yet. So sell me on this. Why should I buy this course? Because it seems so amazing. Like, everyone blunders in games, and like you said, there aren't that many resources. I've gotten Polgar's like book three in tactics, but it's very, very basic. My daughter went through it and liked it, and I did it with her. So why should I get the Survive and Thrive? How will it help me as a chess player?
So the Survive and Thrive course is, as I said earlier, kind of all about blunder prevention and defensive thinking. This doesn't necessarily mean that you're always being like your king's not under attack necessarily in all of these examples or positions in the course, but it's more about, I would kind of say, like making sure that you're able to think through positions, not only focusing on what you're trying to do, but also being hyper aware of what the opponent is either trying to do with their own moves or what they could do in response to something you're potentially looking to play. So I think that if you think about how, let's say, an average game of chess is won, for the most part, it's going to be decided by somebody making a mistake for the most part. Obviously, at higher levels, those mistakes are lower or smaller types of mistakes, but if both players play a perfect game, it's going to be a draw. So it's really going to be dependent on either your opponent's making a mistake and you have a tactic to take advantage of it or punish it in some way, or you're making a mistake and then they're punishing your mistake. This course is all about trying to limit those mistakes that you're making is just what it is. Instead of there are cases in the course where you will also be punishing opponents' mistakes, but usually in the first place you're having to survive the position and then you can thrive and gain an advantage after that, kind of with the name. So the way I had the course kind of outlined was there's a warm-up chapter, which is kind of like the easier side of things, generally speaking, for kind of defensive puzzles. Then I had a chapter that was titled "What's the Threat?" So every position in that chapter, there's going to be the question is, the opponent just played this move. What are they threatening? What do you have to watch out for? And then, like, what's the best way to play in response? So sometimes the threat will be just, oh, your queen is hit and you need to move the queen. Other times the threat will be a little bit more hidden, a little bit trickier. As the chapters progress, they get a little bit more difficult. So, like, I think one of the way th this kind of goes into one of the ways that, or one of, I'd say, kind of the thinking processes that I recommend for students is what I kind of call like a four-step thinking process, where I tend to recommend, like, first step, why did the opponent play their most recent move? What are they trying to do? What do you need to watch out for? You know, kind of thinking about their move in the first place. First of all, a lot of people skip over that step. A lot of people, you know, the opponent makes a move and you had this certain plan you were wanting to do in the first place and you just do it. Oh, my move looks good, I'm going for it. But they'd like just miss what the opponent, you know, was doing in the first place. Generally speaking, kind of in this thinking process that I recommend, the second step is going to be like looking for your own tactics. So what forcing moves do I have? Can I execute a tactic and win material, something like that. The third step is, okay, if I don't have a tactic, how can I just improve my position more from a strategic standpoint, improve a piece, attack a weakness, stop an opponent's plan, different things like that. And then the fourth step is, okay, I have a certain move in mind that I'm thinking about playing, and let me do a blunder check to make sure that this move is safe to play or doesn't have any repercussions. In the course, I really heavily focus on this like first and fourth step, where you're like, again, the one chapter, what's this kind of first step of the thinking process. There are two additional chapters that are titled, I think I titled it Process of Elimination and Candidate Move Options, which are essentially like multiple choice puzzles where there's like two or three different moves to decide between. One of them is going to be safe. The other two are going to get, you're going to like lose material or get mated or whatever it might be. So you have to kind of rule out which moves are bad and pick the ones that's good. And then there's another chapter on doing a blunder check. So I like pose a certain move for the student to think about, you know, should white play, you know, pawn to a4 or something like that. If not, what would be a better move to play instead? Sometimes the move will be fine to play. Other times the move will result in some big mistake that you should avoid, and so you should do something different instead. But essentially, at its core, the course is all about a lot of this kind of like double checking to make sure that like of what's going on in the position. Like, did my opponent do something that I need to react to? I have a couple of moves I'm thinking about. Let me kind of figure out which of these couple of moves are like safe to play. And then maybe I have one move I'm about to play. Let me double check to make sure that move is again safe to play. So it's really just about limiting those mistakes before they happen as much as possible. As opposed to like lots of other tactic courses will focus on like punishing an opponent's mistake rather than avoiding your own mistake in the first place.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. It is definitely a course that I keep going, like, I should really get that. And then, like, something happens and I don't. And once again, I'm going, I think I'm going to buy that today. So I'm trying to buy less courses, Dalton. So you're really causing me some trouble here of sticking to my idea of not buying new books and courses. But it does sound like a fascinating course that really directly hits some of the things that my coach and I have been talking about, which is, you know, like, what does he call it? Like passive calculation or something, where like I do this whole long calculation. He's like, I like what your moves look like, but why do you give your opponents all the worst moves, right? Like, you need to calculate their good moves, not their bad moves. And I'm like, no, that is, I thought that was their good move. And like, he's like, really, really? Okay, sure. So yeah, it sounds like that would be very helpful, continually trying to think like, well, no, what is their best threat in this position? I think that is a really important one. All right, I've got one more category I want to talk to you about, and that's a tough one. It's age. So you hit master at like 18. Here you are, I don't know, what are we, like 30, somewhere in that range?
31.
31. Okay. So what is this difference looking like? Does it feel the same to you? Does it feel like your brain is like needs to work harder to make progress? Like, what, how is age hitting you as someone who's played chess since, you know, you were like 10?
I do think that, at least for me, one of the biggest things I think in terms of what makes training tricky sometimes and what holds me back in games is it's very easy for me to get distracted with mainly trying to, I guess you could say, like kind of just keep focus at the end of the day, like whether it's in the midst of a game or in training or just not getting distracted by something else that's going on, like another tab on the computer or something in the background or some other thing that just looks interesting for whatever reason all of a sudden, and trying to stay focused there in the midst of games. I do sometimes find it a little harder to, again, kind of like focus or calculate for long stretches of time. And sometimes I do feel like I have to repeat certain calculations like more than I probably should be, or at least maybe more than I used to feel like I was doing. So I can feel a little bit, but I don't, I wouldn't say that, at my age, I'm feeling it too much just yet, but I can imagine that it, as time goes on, it could get trickier for sure.
Yeah, I was just curious. I was hoping you were gonna say something like that, not like I'm like 100 times worse than I used to be. So it's good to hear that maybe you've slowed a little, but it's not so noticeable yet. Okay. Lucky for me, I really haven't been playing that long, so I'm like, oh, am I slower than I was 3 years ago when I was 47? I don't know. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, if you don't have a whole lot of to base it on, it kind of makes everything a little bit
Yeah.
easier to see in the short term.
I went hard 20 years ago for 2 years, but it's so long ago. I don't really remember much of that other than like the drive I had for rating. Like I was so goal oriented. Like when I lost rating points, it would nearly destroy me as a person. And I was like, ooh, this does not seem like a healthy thing to do for the next 20 years. So we stepped away till I got some maturity.
Makes sense.
Took a little bit. Well, Dalton, thanks so much for coming on. You've had such an interesting run in chess from, Scholastic player to someone chasing the IM title to making cool chessable courses to coaching. So, where can people reach you if they have follow-ups on any of these various questions?
Yeah, so anybody can feel free to message me on chess.com. The username's Matty D. Perrine. Mattydi Perrine, Perrine. I have a co my coaching website's nextlevelchesscoaching.com, which is not affiliated with Noel Studer, even though our website names are very similar. just saying that. I've had some people contact me and say like I think I was Noel, but not the same person.
Love
But shout out to Noel. So yeah, I would say on message me on chess.com or my website is probably the ways to reach me.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, Dalton, thanks so much for joining me today. And for the rest of you out there, I hope this is the week where you get all the rating points you're looking for. If it's not, it's okay. It's all right. We all go through hard times. Come back next week. We'll have another guest. Maybe they'll have another cool course for you to buy. Oh, I hope not. There's too many great courses out there, but now I have a new one I have to get. So I'll see y'all next week, everybody. Goodbye.